welcome to the 11th episode of Retail Renegades. Sitting next to me is Kirk Johnson. He's the Vice President of Sales for Three Square Market. I'm Tony Dana, the President of Three Square Market. Retail Renegades podcast looks at people or businesses who think outside the box. Specifically, we're looking at the vending industry to give everyday people a true perspective of our industry with both the challenges and triumphs that come with it. If you have not yet, please like and subscribe on YouTube as we'll be posting a new episode on the 15th of every month. On Three Square Market side, we also have a special guest. He's a technology consultant for Three Square Market, Chris Ingram. And then we as a group are extremely pleased to introduce Michael Talley to this episode. Michael is the owner of Talley Vending Services. Michael, thank you for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you all for having me. It's a privilege to be here today.
Yeah, so I guess to get it started, Michael, why don't you just tell us, you know, how long you've been in the business and kind of give an outline to everyone that's listening here.
Yes, sir. So I currently live in Birmingham, Alabama, and I grew up as a kid with my dad doing vending machines. And when I was 16, I started at the prison that he was at. The warden interviewed me and let me go out there at the age of 16, even though you were supposed to be 18 to work. But I had great experience working for him, and I enjoyed it. I love the customer aspect of it, just being able to take care of people, give good, really good customer service, and I love that aspect of it. But then I also thought that I may go my own separate route, and so I did open a family arcade, and then I opened up a gift shop. But then at some point I came back to good old vending, what I knew best. And I have been doing it for 20 years now, and I've built up my route to about 160 machines around the Birmingham, Alabama area.
Wow, great. Hey, Michael, maybe tell a little bit about yourself. You know, you are visually impaired, and just maybe talk about if you've been visually impaired since birth, or did you lose your eyesight? And you've been a part of the BEP program. Very interesting because as people will learn that you actually do your work without any sight is what I understand. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. So I have been legally blind since birth. I have a condition called aniridia, A-N-I-R-I-D-I-A, and that's Greek for no iris, but it also comes with many other side effects. And so being legally blind since birth, and it runs in the family. My dad has it, my aunt has it, and she's totally blind. I may be one that now could be called what they call a high partial, but I'm still legally blind. I have recently had surgery that brought my vision maybe from 2800 to 2200 in one eye, and the other I still see pretty poorly. But yes, sir, I am so privileged to be in what they call the Business Enterprise Program. It's also known as the Randolph Shepherd Program. And across the country, we have about 1,700 blind vendors that are in the Randolph Shepherd Program. It was created by an act back in 1936, the Randolph Shepherd Act, and it is just it's an incredible program. Each state is run a little bit differently, so they may have different rules and procedures. However, just the Randolph Shepherd Act has just been such a blessing to me and to my family and to thousands of visually impaired and blind families across the country.
Michael, maybe tell us a little bit about Randolph Shepherd. How did it become? How did they come with the name? I think I heard the story from Chris before, but interesting when I heard that.
Yes, sir. So it was two U.S. senators that passed it, and it passed in 1936, and it was really just to give an opportunity for blind and visually impaired individuals to work on federal property, so like Social Security buildings, IRS, and from there, federal courthouses, they may set up and work a snack bar or just fill vending machines. And so traditionally, that's how it started. Some had food carts. Some people sold newspapers. Then it kind of did. It evolved over the years. And these days, a lot of times you'll see rest areas and welcome centers ran by visually impaired and blind people, vendors. And then you will see there's also a lot of military dining halls that are also ran by Randolph Shepherd vendors. So it is a phenomenal program. And like I say, it is It's gotten stronger every year. Unfortunately, our numbers have went way down. I remember when I first got back, when I first got in the program in 2002, we were probably about 2,100 blind vendors across the country. We're now down to around 1,700. And unfortunately, and even here in the state of Alabama, I remember being number 142 on the seniority list. And now we have 80 vendors in our program. So there has been a shrinkage, but it's not just due to several factors, but vending as we know it will never be the same. And that's why we've got to think outside the box. We've got to think differently. We've got to be willing to take on new challenges and find ways to overcome obstacles as well. So while our program has just been wonderful for many, many years, it is evolving, and we have to evolve with the vending industry or else we're going to be left behind.
Yeah. And throughout this, Chris, you know, you feel free to jump in wherever. We know you've got a bunch of knowledge on everything that we're talking about as well. So anything else that you'd like to add on the Randolph-Shepard Act, Chris?
I think Michael did a great job in talking about the Randolph-Shepard Act. One area that I want to talk about, Michael said this is something that's needed to come into the industry as it changes. I remember in 2019 when I first met Three Square, I went to NAMA, and it was the first time I met Michael. I'd had blind individuals for a few years, they would say, hey, you've got to meet Michael Talley in Alabama. He's a wealth of knowledge. You've got to meet him. And that's when I met him in NAMA. But also at NAMA, I've had blind individuals coming up to me and saying, you know, how can we figure out a self-pay option? And I looked at every option that I could find in the industry, and I couldn't find that. Luckily, not only was I able to meet Michael Talley at NAMA in 2019, I was also able to really work with Three Square for the first time.
I guess.
Yeah, I remember that well, and we had breakfast together and kind of got to really know each other. And that's what it's all about, is networking and reaching out to other vendors and gaining from their knowledge. And just like this podcast, I mean, I went back and watched everyone that you guys have done. And then I reached out to Jimmy that was on one a few months ago. And what a wealth of knowledge there. I mean, we were on the phone for an hour, but I think he would have talked to me for 4 or 5 hours if I'd needed that or had the time for that. And just what a great guy. But I appreciate Three Square and you guys doing this, because it's so important. It's all about learning from each other and networking. And, you know, while I may be fortunate to know a lot of things, I know that for the things that I don't know, at least I know I can pick up the phone and call someone that does. And so that's what I want to encourage people to do, is just to network and to reach out and to ask others the important questions, and don't be afraid to ask for support, to ask for help. And that's one piece of advice I hope they'll take.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, so people can understand, you know, the challenges, you know, that you may experience on a daily basis. Can you talk us through what a typical day looks like for you, from orders coming into your warehouse to getting out to site to actually stocking, you know, those machines? It'd be really interesting for me, I know, to understand this a little bit more.
Absolutely. So first, it's all about having a really good system in place. And that starts at your warehouse. That starts with being very organized, rotating dates, having cases. If you can't see those dates, using a big bright yellow label with Sharpie marker and writing the dates bigger. And it's really about, and there's been times that I'd find a case, a whole case of pastries, and it was out of date. And it just made me sick. I was like, oh my goodness, you know, and it was so frustrating, because I knew that was money down the drain. But I, you know, I for whatever reason, it didn't get rotated properly. So it's about having a good system, having all my pastries together, having all my chips together, having my crackers together, and then having it done, organized by date. Now, secondly, if you have a route like I do, it's about having a good driver. Obviously, I can't drive. You have to be legally blind to be in this program. You cannot drive to your facility. Therefore, we've got to have a driver. Sometimes it's a spouse, it's a husband, it's a wife. Sometimes that's very challenging. But then maybe your spouse can't. They work a full-time job and they have the health insurance that your family needs. Therefore, you're going to have to go out into the marketplace and find someone. So there, being visually impaired, it's so important to be able to find someone that's dependable, that's trustworthy, that has a good driving record, and it's also that you can train to do your system. If you do FIFO, first in, first out, they've got to be able to do it as well. And then you've got to trust them with your money. And when I mean trust, there's so many aspects of that we could talk for a long time as far as trusting them to be on time, trusting them to handle your customers properly when you're not with them, to handle products properly. So there's just so many things, aspects that we could talk about there. But then also, it needs to be somebody that you enjoy working with. If you're working 10 hours a day with them, you want them to have a good personality so that you look forward to getting up and going to work. It needs to be someone that it reflects your values, your core values, and has good ethics and morals. And those things are so important. And, you know, it was very challenging 20 years ago. I hired people from whether it was my church or organizations as I was part of, and I had to go through several drivers before I found the right fit. I had several drivers that stole money from me. I had one driver I had to fire because she wouldn't wear enough clothes. I asked her, I told her clothes weren't professional. She's going to have to wear more clothes. She said, nope, I quit. So I can tell you some funny stories when it comes to drivers. So there's the system. There's having a driver in place. And then there's your ability to take notes, your ability to pay attention to what the customers want. You know, so many people, I hear so many people, oh, I love Cool Ranch Doritos. And so they just want to put Cool Ranch Doritos in every single machine. But if we're at a location where they don't care for Cool Ranch Doritos or they want more healthy items, then forget the Cool Ranch Doritos. But, you know, so it's about knowing the customers, and it's about those connections, building relationships with them. And there's a lot to that. So the ordering part of it, you know, there's that balance of making sure you have plenty in the warehouse, but then you're not overdoing it where you're throwing a lot of stales away. So that's really a balance there, paying close attention to your inventory levels. And then your bookkeeping, you've got to properly do your books. You've got to track your break rooms and your customers. How much are those locations doing? Is it even worth the investment? Are you getting your ROI, your return on investment that you need? There's those things. And then there's the aspect of what's next. What can you do to improve sales? I know when credit card readers were first coming online, so many people were like, no, I ain't spending that kind of money to put a credit card reader on my machine. However, as we did it, we saw that sales immediately jumped 20 to 30%. And so, you know, yes, it may have been $250 per device per machine, but it's worth the investment, especially if A, you're giving better customer service and taking care of your customers, and B, if it's going to increase your sales. So there's just so many aspects of it, and we have to be willing to learn as much as we can. Look, I'm 45, but I want to be a sponge till the day I die and learn as much as I can, and then I want to take that knowledge and share it with others.
Yeah, that was impressive. Everything that you just put in there, I'm very, very impressed, Michael. Now, I'm obviously an operations guy, so I'm interested. Let's say a machine goes down. Like, how do you go out and service that vending machine that may have some issues with some parts and stuff like that? How does that process work?
Yes, sir. So obviously that's going to be different with every state, but in our program here in Alabama, we have technicians that are state employees. And so we pay into a fund that helps pay for that. We pay in a percentage. In some states, it's different. Some states, it may be 5 or 10. They're up to 50% of net proceeds will go into a big fund that helps pay for that. So really, for me, and this has evolved. I remember back in the back in my day, whenever I first started, we'd call and leave a work order on an answering machine, and then you had to wait for the technicians to call in and check that work order, and then go out and work on it. Well, these days, I just shoot a group text to the two technicians, and whoever can get to it quickest is going to get to it. And so I send out a very detailed work order. It has today's date, the time, it has the location, and it has the machine problem, like the type of machine, whether it's an AMS or a crane. And then it has what's going on, and whether it won't take dollars or as much information as I have that I get from my customers. I put my business card on every single vending machine. And some people think I'm crazy for that, especially having 160 machines, because they're like, oh my gosh, you probably get a ton of calls. But here's the thing, and this is actually a selling point. I say, with me, you get access to the owner. You don't have to go through a switchboard to put in a work order. You get to come directly to the owner. So that's really one of my selling points. But that's what I do, is I text, a group text, and then the technicians come back and say, hey, it's corrected, and this is what's going on. And so it's immediate. And then we can take that, put it into a Microsoft Excel, track those orders to see if a machine is just having way too many technical issues. So it's a pretty good system. I know it can always be better, but that's how we handle it right now.
Yeah, so kind of touched on the operation side, which I'm very impressed with. And then let's talk sales. Like, you've got 160 vending machines out there. You must have a little salesmanship to you. How do you go out and get these accounts? And what separates you from anyone else that's going in these accounts?
Absolutely. So when I started, I had about 30 machines, and I've been as high as 220 machines at one time. But also, do like being able to give accounts away and bless other blind vendors and help them out as well. But so one of the important things that I knew from the beginning was the importance of having a website and having a really good website. My wife thought I was crazy. She thought I was putting way too much money into it. I probably invested over time, about $10,000 into not one, but two different websites. So I wanted those leads to be able to come in and then me be able to follow up on those. But then also, I have done like referral programs where I put notes on my vending machines that says, hey, if you help us get into another company, we'll give you $100 and give them $100. But sales is so important. You've got to be able to go out, and you've got to be able to, once you get your foot in the door or even get an opportunity to interview with them, then you've got to be able to close that deal. And really, that's about differentiating yourself from someone else. What makes you better than the other guys? We know that there are, especially for companies that expect commissions, it's tough to match that against the Cokes and the Pepsis and the Canteens of the world. We would have a really hard time being able to compete there. But if I can't compete on commission, I can compete on customer service. I can compete on better equipment. I can compete on new technologies and inventions. So really, it's about, I have a list that says top 10 reasons to use Tally Vending Services. You've got to be able to differentiate yourself from other companies, and then you've got to be able to show them that you mean it, that you're sincere, and get them on board. And usually I have about a 70% close rate. And though, even in the times that I was told no, I always learned something from it. I always go back and I say, what could I have done better? How could I have done that sales pitch better? If it's okay, I'd like to share one story. There was this one company that had 700 employees, and I was so excited. And I wanted it. I wanted it really bad. It was going to be my largest account that I'd ever had. And I remember going in, and I'm talking to the lady, And it just, I'm talking 90 to nothing, and I'm not connecting with her. I'm noticing that she's paying attention to other things in the room. I can tell her head's turning left and right, and I'm like, I'm not connecting with her. And sure enough, when I left there, I never heard back from her. I called, emailed, and texted to try to follow up. Not one return. So really, connecting with people is so important. There's other times. This is another neat story. It was an assisted living nursing home, and I met with her, the lady that was over the vending, and one of the older ladies came in, and I saw that she was deaf, and so I told her, I said, "Hi, my name is Michael," and I started doing it in sign language, and the lady that's over the vending, she just smiled, you know, her face was like, wow. And the people with me were like, yeah, it was a done deal at that point. It was over. And so the light in the conference room just went out. So it's all about connecting with people. And that's just so important. So you can have all of the great sales techniques you want, but if you don't connect with people, sometimes it's going to be hard to get into an account.
Yeah, I love both of them. That's good.
You know, the other thing I noticed is that, you know, I've worked with the visually impaired for probably about 40 years. First on the sporting side with beat ball and audio dartboards. And then as I started Lieberman's and started working exactly, I was one of those guys that they would call for a tech and we'd send a tech out in Minnesota. So I learned a lot over the years, but you know, how people could tell by the bottles. I'd say, well, how do you know it's Pepsi or Coke? Well, we can tell by the bottles or the dimples. There's ways they can find, which is very interesting. And the other thing I thought was very interesting during your talk is that one time you went and you sold yourself and you sold your company. You didn't sell it, your handicap. And sometimes I think people want to go towards that way first. And to me, that impresses me. And also, too, just you talking, I could see the excitement in your voice, how much you love this business. And I think that reflects when you go into an account and they see the same thing. I think that's big. I see it on Chris when he talks about helping with our technology and our accessibility, how excited he gets. And I see that same excitement with you.
Yeah. Yes, sir. And look, and I own, and Chris, I want you to talk about this too, but I own my visual impairment. I tell people I'm visually impaired, but I'm so blessed to have the abilities that I do have. And I'm going to use those abilities to deliver, to meet and exceed your expectations. I tell them vending should be the least of management's problems. And I mean that. So I'm going to do everything that I can do to take care and to help management out. But we have to own that visual impairment. And, but at the same time, I don't want someone to choose me either because I have one or not choose me because I have a visual impairment.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like a statement. I think NFB said this a few years ago. Don't let your lack of vision dictate your vision. And I try to use that in every single conversation. Yeah, it's no secret that we can't see well, but we've got to be able to show how we're much bigger than our vision. I do have a question for you, Michael. I know I'm for the success of the visually impaired person first and foremost. So when I first came to 3Square, I gave them three initiatives. I said, if you want to make blind people pay attention, you've got to have training that's tailored towards the blind person. You've got to have support that's tailored towards the blind person. And you've got to have accessibility that actually makes sense to them and makes them profitable. I know that you hear a lot of folks in the blindness industry. I know I've talked to National Association of Blind Merchants and those guys who have been huge helping out with 3Square as well. What are you hearing in the blindness industry? And then also, what made you choose 3Square over other options?
That is a good question. And so I had, especially like through folks like Zach Snow, Nikki Gekas, I'd heard over the last few years just 3Square's commitment to accessibility. And I do know that's very important. I have also, though, one of our vendors in Alabama did have 3Square as a market. And that was... you know, that and bragged and said how good it was, how accessible it was. And that was even several years ago. I mean, that was four or five years ago. So I will say this. When I did my research, basically Milo's Tea came to me and they said, hey, our Tulsa plant has a micro market. We want one at our headquarters plant in Bessemer and our Homewood plant. And I was like, all right, well, let me do my research. And so I asked for like a week and I flew out to Tulsa to see their micro market. I do not have a micro market. And I want to be honest about this. I should have had one years ago, guys. As much of a go-getter as I am, I work from 5 in the morning to 8 at night and never complain. I love it. I love what I do. But I should have had a micro market several years ago. I had a company that had 300 employees and I was filling the vending machines and doing my thing, but I did not go to them and approach them with, you know what, you've got this one brick room. It's got beautiful big glass windows. That'd be a perfect place for a micro market. And it would be. Well, I got noticed that in 30 days, they were terminating our contract. Well, my main contact with that company left, and that's always dangerous. But then, I got a letter that said, hey, 30 days, we need your machines out. And I found out that a company or canteen had come in and said, hey, we want to put a micro market in there. So that really stung. I was like, wow, I could have probably had that if I had knew about micro markets. So whenever Milo's came to me, I knew that it was time. I should have done it years ago, but I took it very, very seriously. I did a lot of research, a lot. I called, spent time on websites. I talked to other vendors, visually impaired and non-VI impaired vendors. And really and truly, there was a couple things that reasons why it's chose 3Square. One was the customer service aspect of it. Everyone that I've spoke to from the very beginning has been just very helpful, very informative. And that means a lot to me. I mean, customer service, I know how much it means to my customers and I take it very, very serious. But I mean, you know, Andy has been great and talking to me for several years, trying to get me to come on board. And then Kirk, whenever I spoke to him, he's just phenomenal. He even took my call on a weekend. I felt so bad about messing with him on the weekend, but he called me back on a Saturday afternoon after getting out of a hockey game. You know, it was that kind of commitment that I was like, that is what I want. That's what I need, especially for my first micro market. But then on the accessibility side, like I said, I'd been hearing for years that they, you know, they're committed, they're working on it, and they're bringing blind vendors to their headquarters to work on it. So I was proud of that. I appreciated that. But it really was about the customer service. It was about the accessibility. And then it was about very fair and reasonable back-end fees as well. As a businessman, it has to make sense. The ROI has to be good. So all three of those aspects were why I chose 3Square.
Pretty good answer.
Yeah.
We appreciate that, Michael.
I mean every word. I'm passionate and I mean every word.
You know, and Chris has been a big part of getting us where we are. That when you mentioned accessibility, we realized that as sighted people, we didn't really know how to approach it or what we needed. So that's when we started bringing in Chris and Nikki Gakis, and I think it was Michael from Mankato, Minnesota, and helped us. But then we decided that it was he was important to our company that we hired Chris and work with him on that. And he's going to be a big part of our NAMA team next year. Or this year and years to come. So very nice to hear that compliments.
Michael, how was the transition? So you kind of, you talked about the canteen site that you lost because you didn't offer a market. What was that transition then? What were some of the challenges when you did get into the markets?
Well, honestly, you know, it's really about learning. First of all, it's just very exciting because you get to see how many different products you can provide. And Knowing that you're going to be able to, one, deliver better customer service, which I'm all about, but number two, you can increase sales because you can offer such a wide variety. But it's really about learning and being willing to face that challenge, the challenge of how to handle everything on the back end, how to merchandise things. A lot of people let fear overcome them. They're like, I don't know how to do it. I don't know what it's supposed to look like. But there again, if you have a good support team, you can pick up the phone and you can call and say, hey, Chris, what about this? How do I handle entering this product information? How, you know, and so it's really about and about finding the right kiosk, which fit works best. And every break room, every customer is going to be different. So it's just really about learning all of the aspects of it. And I am a systems person. I love to study and evaluate systems. And always I like to figure out how we can tweak it and make it better. But really, it's just checking off those boxes. Hey, this, you know, this kiosk, this security camera system, these are the products going in there. So really and truly, it's really just about transitioning and having a good checklist in place to be successful, to be able to deliver that to your customers.
And then, Michael, did you, with your markets, did you enter into like the fresh food arena as well?
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing too, is, you know, for years with my vending machines, having the sandwiches in there, I can't tell you how many times people would take a picture and text it to me where the sandwich is hanging halfway out of a spiral, and you feel so bad, and you're like, hey, I can get you a refund. In fact, these days I offer Venmo and Cash App and PayPal, that kind of thing. But you always feel bad because that person is needing, they're hungry, they're wanting something to eat right then. But you can only do it with, depending on those spirals. You can have wide spirals, but still not have like a box, like a breakfast bowl. You can't put that in a vending machine. It's very, very difficult. So that's the beauty of it, is, you know, being able to not just carry 5 fresh items or 7 fresh items. You can carry 20, 15, 20 different things, being able to put it in that cooler, have it look really good. But then your customers, they know that when they want to reach in there and grab it, they're going to be able to get it. They don't have to worry about it hanging up. I can't tell you, you know, how much that means to the customers, that not had that fear being taken away of their sandwiches getting stuck. They're hungry. They can't leave. They need something to eat. They need fuel for the next few hours of their shift. And then it's sitting so close. And then what they do, they rock the machine a lot of times and it may fall out, but then it shifts all the other sandwiches. And then it's that, it just makes it that much worse for the customers coming behind them. So yeah, fresh sandwiches, you can't put a salad in a vending machine. I mean, there are some machines you can, but those machines, the carousel machines that we know so well, they usually look really, really half empty because they hold so much product. But it's just a whole, it's a difference between night and day. It's a whole nother level, being able to have a freezer or a cooler, and the people just reach in and grab, then putting their money in a sandwich machine and hoping and praying their sandwich falls down to the delivery bin.
Well, I'm not going to say that this was my favorite episode, but because we've had some awesome guests, but Michael, this has been pretty exciting to hear your journey and the passion that comes out of your voice when you're talking about the business and just how much of a go-getter you are. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on this episode. Chris, thanks for being a special guest to us as well.
No, I just look forward to seeing you on next week at NAMA. NAMA is I call it the Super Bowl of vending next week. Getting excited for that and getting excited to talk to you some more there, Mike.
Yeah. Well, in person, Michael.
Hey, thank you, Tony. Thank you, Kirk and Chris, too. It's been a pleasure working with all three of you. And I look forward to seeing you all in person. And feel free, if someone reaches out and wants to talk to me, I love to mentor and to inspire and to encourage, just like Jimmy did. Jimmy spent an hour with me, and I'm gonna be calling him back and asking him some more questions. He's a very, very intelligent guy, just a wonderful guy. Happy for him that he's retired now. But I would be more than happy to mentor, to inspire and help in any way that I can, anyone, that it, whether it's about systems, micro markets, anything that I can do to help, I'll be more than happy to. So feel free to pass along my phone number and or email information.
Thank you. That's really great. Well, that wraps up the 11th episode of Retail Renegades. Again, anyone that's listening, like and subscribe, and we'll continue releasing new episodes each and every month. Thanks again, Michael. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.